Doug here. It's Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. And I'm Amelia Dalton, back from the wild blue yonder called No Sleep Land, or as you may know it by another name, maternity leave. And I'm back to rock this here engineering podcast with all my might, with a little help from coffee. This week, my friends, my engineering compatriots, we're talking about IP. We're talking about IoT, and we're talking about Star Wars. So really, what could be better? First up, let's tackle those I words. IoT, IP. My guest this week is Ron Lohman from Synopsys, and we're chatting about IoT edge devices. What are they? What are the unique design challenges surrounding them? And what IP is best suited for the IoT edge game? And why engineering is like coaching a five-year-old soccer team. So, without further ado. Hi, Ron. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about IoT edge devices. What are they exactly, and what kind of products and markets are you seeing them emerge in?
Sure. So obviously there's many definitions around what IoT is, and in particular, edge device is really referring to the devices that are interacting with our physical world, and these can be sensor inputs, or they can be some sort of physical interaction, spinning a motor or doing some sort of actuator to accomplish tasks to interact with our physical world. And obviously those things are then connected to a more central aggregator and then ultimately to our cloud. So it's really referring to the devices at the edge of the internet. And as far as what types of products we're seeing emerge, and it's really a large range of products. It's very fragmented. It's always been very fragmented. Wearables is obviously a new and exciting space, but there's obviously a lot of other traditional type applications such as building automation, and now we're seeing that automation introduced into the home. So a lot of exciting new products.
So Ron, what do you think are the key distinct design requirements for IoT edge devices?
Yeah, so we've really talked about a lot of interesting design requirements with our customers. And since it's a very fragmented market, the conversations can go in many different directions, but there's really four key categories that we've seen commonality. And first of all, it's connecting to the internet. So some sort of communication protocol, in particular wireless, being introduced and integrated into SoCs more and more today. So connectivity, interoperability, what type of RF is being integrated is critical. And for our perspective, Bluetooth Smart has become almost a de facto standard for your personal space, being anywhere from toothbrushes to door locks to wearables that connect to your phone as the aggregator of choice. But it goes beyond that. Wireless is one of the main design requirements and integrating that on chip. Security, since now we have an open communication path that's more readily accessible, security is absolutely required. More and more you hear about data breaches and how to handle those, and more sophisticated hackers out there stealing information that's increasingly becoming more valuable to them. Beyond that is more sensor processing. So you see applications like 9D sensor fusion, really adding compass and gyroscope type sensors, or simple sensors like temperature and pressure. So a lot of sensing. You see vision capabilities being integrated, so some exciting stuff on the sensor side. And I guess ultimately when you're adding all these components, security, sensors, and connectivity to these designs, they have a huge impact on the overall power envelope that's required to operate the SoC. So that's a huge design complexity for our customers and something that they have to address very aggressively. So to summarize, it's really around connectivity, the security, the sensor processing, and then how you ensure that you optimize for power efficiency.
All right, I know you can't name names, but when you talk to the major players you're working with in this space, what are they confiding are the biggest design challenges that keep them up at night?
It goes back to some of the things I did mention already, and low power, power efficiency is probably the tops of their list. It's a major challenge to them when they're integrating these things. The second thing is really how they integrate it. What can they integrate, and how does that play a role in which process technologies they're selecting? And we've seen some process technologies that are obviously a little more popular than others. In particular, for more simple devices, we're seeing 40 nanometer and 55 nanometer process technologies. And we're working closely with foundries to ensure our IP is available in those process technologies that can address low power in combination with our solutions. So it's really about integration as well as power efficiency as major design challenges for them, specifically with a lot of the larger guys.
So Ron, what do you think are the biggest limitations of using existing or slightly tweaked solutions developed for markets like mobile for IoT edge devices?
Yeah, so what we quickly realized is in this space, because it's so fragmented, these solutions have been opting to leverage existing platforms from, let's say, mobile devices or automotive space where there is higher volume established industries. That is no longer enough. We really felt that we're going to have to reinvest in our solutions and put money where our mouth is on really providing solutions that address these challenges that I talked about. And that's been found in the fact that we've recently acquired Bluetooth Smart that I talked about earlier. We recently acquired some security IP. And then we've re-architected and optimized our existing portfolio of IP. We knew that the IP that we had for mobile space, the IP that we had for cloud computing or other traditional spaces, wasn't going to address IoT. We took things like our USB IP and we took learnings that we found at more aggressive technology nodes and backported that to the popular IoT process technology. So we optimized for die size, we optimized for power consumption, we added additional low power features, and then we've also started to provide subsystems. So we actually have a sensor and control subsystem which combines many of our IP titles into a very tightly coupled solution which we feel is very differentiated on the market.
Now, Synopsys recently announced an IoT edge device IP portfolio. So what's new here, especially with these new IoT edge devices?
I briefly touched on some of the things that are new, but we really started from our memories and logic libraries. We felt that we needed to provide additional features there. For instance, we provide tools that address test capabilities for embedded flash integration. We also added thick oxide libraries in our logic libraries to provide functionality for sleep states. And this is, a lot of these applications are in sleep states 99% of the time. So having a keep alive region that is extremely low leakage is important, and we have that available. We also have optimized for voltage, low voltage in particular, something that we also feel is differentiated is we can support down to 60% of VDE-NOM of the process technology of our customer's choice. So a lot of times that gets to some very aggressive voltage numbers. For instance, at 55 nanometer, we're well below the 0.9 volts that's supported by the foundries themselves. And so we've taken initiatives, and really when we say re-architected and optimized, we actually did that. We took a team of engineers that took quite a bit of time to optimize for die size and power and lower that voltage capability on a lot of these solutions. We've also improved some of the performance on some of our products. For instance, our data converters are higher resolution now and very popular in general microcontroller space for a very general purpose data converter because it can handle many of the standard applications that you see on the market for these edge applications.
Now, how do you see design strategies, particularly with the use of IP, evolving going forward?
One of the key offerings that we have is our subsystem offering. And so what we see is individual IP does need to play together. And there are ways to re-architect systems to optimize for power and to optimize for performance as well as die size. And we have a very unique capability in our ARC processors to do just that. So we provide application-specific subsystems, our sensor control systems, one of the first ones that we have out there. We have a vision processor. We also have audio capabilities. We've released some motor control capabilities within the software libraries. With the advent of more and more heterogeneous computing to handle specific tasks on chip, these subsystem designs can play a big role in reducing the overall power footprint and die size. So for instance, when you add security and connectivity, designers that are doing that with their existing processor that's on chip tend to overclock that processor. And so the advent of a subsystem to handle some of that functionality can reduce the overall frequency and thus the power envelope as well as optimize for the function itself. So that's one of the things that we see forward and how we're positioning some of the offerings that we have.
Okay, Ron, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, you mentioned to me earlier that you are the coach of your son's soccer team. He's 5. Now, what is the biggest challenge you've encountered while coaching 5-year-olds playing soccer?
Well, I've had experience coaching older kids and, you know, at a competitive level. So I had expectations that, sure, 4- and 5-year-olds would be similar, but by no means can they handle that. It's really trying to understand how to keep them occupied and motivated and just having fun all the time. So just to share an experience, I remember my first game, we played 3 people at a time and we had 6 people on the team, but the success was when I had less than 3 of them crying at once and I was able to actually feel the team. So, you know, it was a learning process like anything, but it's definitely been a lot of fun.
Sounds like an engineering team, I know. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Ron. This was super cool.
I appreciate the time.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, the countdown has begun. As of launch time this week, it is now 41 days until the new episode of Star Wars comes to the big screen. And as I am sure you also know, this season, the store shelves are already chocked full with Star Wars-related gear for this year's gift-giving holidays. And no, I didn't know that I needed Star Wars-themed mascara, but apparently I do. That's right, from t-shirts, Legos, stamps, and a new Stormtrooper helmet, there's a virtual Boba Fett bounty of Star Wars merch to gobble up, or to give out to your friends and loved ones, however that works out for you. But what about a present that keeps on giving? After the action figures have all lost their heads, that Princess Leia t-shirt is all stretched out, and the Millennium Falcon Lego set is only still half done. Where does that leave us? Empty and alone, that's where. Okay, no, but what if every single day we could feast, yes, literally feast, on the Death Star? Would that make life just a bit more livable? Ladies and gentlemen, from the same company that gave us ice cubes in the shape of Han Solo trapped in carbonite, let me introduce the Think Geek Star Wars Death Star Waffle Maker. Yes, perfectly evil waffles in the shape of a 7-inch Death Star. Not really sure where that fits in the actual scale of things, but anyway, could be yours for a low, low price of $39.95, not including shipping and handling, of course. And if you were wondering, yes, it is officially licensed, and the Death Star design is duplicated on both sides. It would be pretty lame if it wasn't, right? Unfortunately, this sugary Death Star duplicator is only available to be shipped in the United States and Canada. So folks, I would suggest not waiting. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go straight to thinkgeek.com and search for Star Wars Waffle Maker. And heck, you can also click the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com as well. And when you're filling out that shipping form, go ahead and send one to Amelia Dalton, care of Tech Focus Media. Thanks. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, well, it won't be around for long. No, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. We also have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal, chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very own popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed via Podbean, or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, even if your company makes it. Yes, that's okay. Any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend. Look forward to next week's MEMS Executive Congress coverage. Oh, yes. Or the best geeky hotspot in your city. Shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of November 6th, 2015, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.